Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everybody. This is Evelyn from the Syosset Public Library's Turn the Page podcast. I am a Reader Services Librarian at the Syosset Public Library, and we have a very special guest with us today, a debut author. But first, I would like to introduce my co-host.
Hi, I'm Jessica with the Syosset Public Library. I'm the Community Engagement Specialist.
And with us, we have our special debut author.
I am Susan Mihalik, and my debut novel is being released by Scout Press on Tuesday, February 16th. It's called Dark Horses.
And Jessica and I both read it and absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I don't want to give anything away. So Susan, can you please tell our audience what it's about?
Yes. I think of it as a survival story. It's about control and power and who wields it and how they wield it and why. So that's sort of the very general overview, but specifically it is about a 16-year-old equestrian prodigy named Roan Montgomery and her father Monty, and the fact that Monty controls every aspect of Roan's life. He's a former Olympic champion, he's a gold medalist, and he is her trainer and coach as well as being her father. He literally controls practically every minute of her life. He takes her to school and he picks her up. She's on a short schedule. And that's the only time she really has away from him. Occasionally she gets to ride out on her own, but most of her time is spent in lessons, which she loves. She's a very determined young woman. She is absolutely set on going to the Olympics.
Okay, sounds great. Now let me just say Dark Horses received 4-star reviews, Publishers Weekly, Booklist, Kirkus, and Library Journal. That's unbelievable. And Oprah Magazine says it's a heart-pounding, can't-take-your-eyes-off-it debut novel, which we 100% agree. Uh-huh. And it's on the most anticipated books of 2021. What was it like when you saw your name and your book title on Oprah's list?
It's all been unbelievable. In so many ways, this has all been very unexpected. And at the same time, it's everything I ever dreamed of, but was afraid to really hope for. it's absolutely been fantastic. A lot of people have sort of commiserated with me because of a book being released during the pandemic, a debut novel coming out during the pandemic. And you know, it's been fine. It's actually, the team at Simon & Schuster's fantastic, and the Dark Horses has actually gotten a lot of recognition. More, as I said, than I ever hoped for, but everything I dreamed of.
It's so wonderful. Now, she is a equestrian. Are you one? Are you a horse? I mean, you had so much horse detail
in there. It was very detailed. The world of writing and just sort of, I think one of my favorite things that I learned when I started reading it, Roan mentions that horses have, I think, over a dozen or up to a dozen facial expressions. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought of that.
Most people don't think of it. I worked in riding therapy, and a woman I worked with who volunteered there had never really been around horses. And she was astonished to discover that they had their own personalities, you know, let alone facial expressions. I am a horseback rider. I'm not an equestrian of Roan's caliber. I would aspire to that, but I'm not competitive when it comes to horseback riding. I just want to improve my own skills and be a better rider for myself and for my horse. I was literally on a horse before I could walk. My husband calls that picture the head on the horse because I have a giant baby head. Mm-hmm. And I'm wearing a diaper and a smile. And the smile pretty much hasn't changed. I still look like that when I ride a horse. It just makes me happy. I have an American warm blood, that I purchased last year. I've had him for almost a year now, and he's absolutely fantastic. He's a former dressage horse and has had so much more training than I have. I've had very few lessons over my life. So I'm mostly self-taught, which can be disastrous, but so far hasn't been. And my horse Goldmark is teaching me a lot as well. They make wonderful teachers. When I taught therapeutic horseback riding, that bond that I witnessed between horse and rider was really special. I had experienced it myself, but to see these children who had disabilities that I was working with get so much out of riding. They would have no less mobility than any other rider. The horse could go places that, you know, any other horse could go that the child might not be able to go on their own. So that was a fantastic experience. And largely where I gained horse show experience, because I had students who went to the state horse show. So I, as their coach, went along. So that's largely where my horse show experience is from.
So you didn't have to do much research. You already knew most of the...
I hope I have gotten it right. There's always the chance that an error has crept in. I had an eventing groom that I was introduced to vet those sections for me. And if any errors are in there, they are mine alone, not hers, because she did a great job.
Yeah. Don't know much about... I know nothing. All I know is my niece rides and she has a horse. That's what I know about horseback riding. She is a beautiful horse. And that's all I knew. But I still found it so interesting, all the details about the eventing and, you know, so much I didn't know in the Olympics. And I mean, I didn't even know horseback riding was part of the Olympics. I didn't know
it's
that.
The only sport in the Olympics where men and women compete together. There aren't separate divisions.
That's great. That's good.
So the book is called Dark Horses, and I think it's just kind of an important thing to just throw out there to listeners that it does go to dark places.
It does.
What gave you the inspiration for the entire story? Kind of throwing that out there to the listeners, but also not 100% wanting to give everything away.
Sure. In addition to exploring this topic of the abusive father and the daughter who is caught up in the abuse, I wanted to raise the stakes. So I took that literally and raised the stakes by setting the story against this backdrop of three-day eventing, which is a very intense sport. It's the only sport in the world where you are required to wear your medical information on an armband when you compete. There can be accidents, horses die, riders die. It's can be grueling. She absolutely loves it. So I was thinking, why would a teenager tolerate this abuse? There had to be something in it for her. And what's in it for her has nothing to do with her father, except for his expertise. So as I said, he's her trainer and her coach. She wants to go to the Olympics. She believes she can get there, but she thinks she can only get there with her father as her trainer and her coach. So, That is the carrot on the stick for her to stay. And she wishes it weren't so, but there it is. In addressing the abuse, I wanted to do something I had not seen anyone else do. And that is to be graphic and explicit, because I didn't want the reader to be able to fade to black if my main character couldn't fade to black. I wanted the reader to see everything she went through, because I wanted them to understand, whether it's an intense moment with her father or an intense moment with a horse, I wanted them to understand how and why Roan was trapped into this situation. And I wanted them to experience as closely as they could what she experienced. I wanted to go right up to the line without crossing it, because I didn't want people to throw the book across the room without finishing it. So that was kind of in the back of my mind. And my agent and my editor both worked with me to tone that down a little bit, because some of the scenes were even more hard to take than they are now. I think the payoff is worth it. It's up to each reader to decide, of course.
I mean, the book does, the advanced reader copy we have does come with a warning. Is that going to be on the regular book too, or?
It is not on the book. I have bound books.
Okay.
And I looked at it to see whether there was a trigger warning on it, and there is not.
Okay.
There's not. I hope the word will have gotten out enough that people won't be too horrified if they think they're reading a book about a horse girl.
Right.
Which they are. They open it up, they start reading, and they see that there are other layers to this story.
At first I was like, oh, this would be great for my niece to read. And then I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, but to be honest, I think that, you know, like the back of it implies that this isn't the Saddle Club.
Right.
That there's something else, you know, there's something else going on.
Right.
That's deeper. And, you know, Dark Horses, again, the title, it's there in plain sight. And I do think it's interesting because trigger warnings on books have begun to pop up in the market in general. Mm-hmm. However, I don't think it's become completely mainstream.
I had mixed feelings about having a trigger warning, which I never expressed to anyone. So here's a scoop for you.
Yeah.
But I did have mixed feelings about it. But then I thought, okay, there's certain content that I don't want to see, say on Facebook. I don't want to see an abused animal on Facebook. So don't put that picture in my feed. So when I could relate it to something that I myself would like a trigger warning for, I thought, okay, this is okay. It's okay for people to know.
But at the same time, and Evelyn and I talked about this a little bit, it's also, I think, important for survivors of abuse to not only see themselves in the story, but, you know that they're not alone, but also see other people's determination to moving past it.
I wasn't trying to embed a lesson in here, because I think it's kind of a mistake to make a lesson the point of your book when it's fiction.
It didn't come off as a lesson, by the way.
No.
I didn't mean to imply that did.
No. But I'm glad that message comes through. I have always believed that about books, that for better or worse, books can show us different ways of being in the world. And I think Roan is a young woman who has great strength, great resilience, great determination. She doesn't trust herself, what teenager really does deep down. She is absolutely trapped and absolutely determined that this abuse is not going to derail her career goals. That devotion to her sport and to her horses really carries her through. And I couldn't have done that with another sport, even though I'm not a rider of Roan's caliber. I'm not a figure skater at all. I couldn't have set this against figure skating or gymnastics, but horses, I know something about.
It's not based on any truth, I hope.
No, not at all.
I'm glad.
Although, you know, there are different ways of experiencing and different kinds of abuse.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, she feels a sense of shame because she has been made to believe that she is complicit in this abuse. And I think she does have some agency, some, not a lot, with her father. But as she falls in love with a boy her own age, she starts to explore, you know, what she will allow what her boundaries are, I suppose, is a better way to put it. But as for the shame that she feels, we've all experienced shame over something. You know, we've all experienced a devastating loss in our lives, whether it's a death of a parent or something else. So we've all got common emotions, even if we've not been through this exact experience. So I did draw on some of that, you know, moments when I felt certainly that I had been disciplined too harshly by a parent. Moments when, you know, something was just agonizingly shameful for me. And it could be something as simple as putting on a swimsuit.
Yeah.
Well, and she also, I mean, the emotional abuse from her mother also was, that was like, I mean, heartbreaking also. I mean, the poor girl.
The mother is not a happy person in my mind. She's undiagnosed with borderline personality disorder, people that you have to walk on eggshells around all the time. And I have had members of my family with that characteristic, also undiagnosed. So I'm playing armchair psychologist here. And it's just awful to be around them. They can spark at nothing. It just takes nothing to set them off, and you don't know what you've done wrong.
Yeah, I definitely was very interested in Roan's relationship with her mother, and just where it was before everything happened in the book. And you do give some background and some context for it, although I don't think it necessarily is excusing Roan's mother for her behavior. And I thought it was a very well-written path. I'm not going to talk much about the directions it went, or even just the kernels of beginning, because I do think the readers need to experience it with Roan, as you had mentioned. But it is very well done and heart-wrenching that, you know, this young woman, she's 16 years old, and really her mother should be an advocate for her, but her mother is just so wrapped up in her own view of things that she's completely voiding Roan's experience.
She does. And that is, I did do a lot of research on abuse and this particular type of abuse. And very often, another parent is told that the abuse is taking place, and the other parent doesn't want to know, doesn't want to hear it, hears it and doesn't want to intervene for whatever selfish reason the parent may have. And that is the case with Roan's mother, but I felt like I needed to give some foundation to why she felt the way that she did. I felt that just being a stereotypical, you know, one-dimensional, okay, the other parent doesn't care kind of mom, I needed to give some foundation to that. So in my mind, there are kind of three triangles in the book, three relationship triangles, and Roan is always at the apex. So there's the relationship that she has with her mother and father, and there's the relationship that she has with her mother and Gertrude, who is the family's housekeeper.
Loved her.
And there's the relationship Roan has with her father and Will, the boy she falls in love with. And the maybe a Venn diagram would be better.
See, I was actually wondering if Jasper was part of
the relationship.
Jasper's the horse, by the way.
Jasper, the relationship Roan has with Jasper very much parallels the relationship she has with her father in its intensity.
Yeah, she, that is her horse. It's interesting because she speaks about other horses she grew up with that one might think she would have been closer to, but Jasper is the very first horse we meet in this book, and Roan refers to her connection with Jasper as magic. Mm-hmm. And in a way, he's almost like an extension of herself, or, you know, like the freedom that she really, really wants.
Yeah, horses definitely represent freedom to her. Jasper is based a little bit on two horses that I've had, that I've known. I leased a horse for 9 years. She eventually colicked and had to be put down, mm-hmm. but she was a very kind horse, a very gentle horse. And then I leased the horse that I bought last year. I leased him for a few years before I bought him. And a lot of Jasper comes from Goldmark as well. So it's nice to be able to pull in little threads from real life and kind of weave them through the book without cannibalizing, you know, anyone's life. Just little threads of realism that help me nail a character, for example.
What about Psycho Pony? Is she based on a real horse?
Psycho Pony is based on a real horse. Her owner shall remain nameless. I'm not sure. I think her owner will recognize her when she reads the book. It would be kind of hard to not recognize. There was a horse, she's since passed, at the barn where Goldmark is boarded and where the other horse that I leased was boarded. And this horse was mistreated, not at our barn, but she had been sold to someone else whose workers mistreated this horse. And it became where he couldn't ride her anymore. She became unrideable for him. So he contacted the previous owner and said, "Do you want her back?" And of course the previous owner wanted her back and was probably really the only person who the horse accepted. She was just like Diva in the book. I don't think she spooked at lunge lines and whips, but she was very unpredictable. You couldn't make up with her. You know, you couldn't appeal to her better nature because there was no better nature. You couldn't sweet talk her. You couldn't give her treats and, you know, get on her good side that way. There was no good side. And that's Diva.
Wow. How long did it take you to write this book?
That's a good question, and I'm glad you asked. So bear with me as I give you the answer. I started the book in the early 2000s, which seems like a long time ago, but there were years at a time when I didn't touch it. I worked at an art school, and the job just drained all my energy from me, including my creative energy. So I would work on the book maybe a week out of the year, any given week out of the year. So at the end of several years, I had three chapters, which later combined to become the first chapter. That was that story. So I had three chapters when I decided in 2007 that if I did not finish this book, I was never going to write anything else. This was going to go unpublished, unseen. And I made a deal with myself that every evening when I came home from work — by now the art school had closed and I was working in an office — so every evening when I came home from work, I would just write for a couple of hours. And I did it for a week and made more progress than I had made in all the preceding years. So I kept doing it, and that's how I eventually finished it. I finished it in 2009. And spent a year editing it myself. I wasn't nearly as hard on myself as I should have been in that year. But I edited it myself for a year. I contacted an agent I had known and asked her if she would be interested in seeing it. She said yes. I sent it to her. She called me. She was excited. She said, "Cut 100 pages and send it back." I did, and I never heard from her again. Except for a couple of sort of life-giving, hope-raising messages saying it was next in her to-be-read pile. I don't know if she read it and decided it wasn't for her or what. Exactly the same thing happened with another agent that a friend had referred me to. So by now, two more years had passed, and 4 years had passed since I had finished the book. And I thought, this is crazy. So I took a week off from the day job, created a spreadsheet of agencies, looked at all the agents on each website to find the one I thought would be most suited to the book, and spent the week sending out queries, whatever they wanted in the form of a query. And by the end of the week, I had an agent.
Oh, wow.
So then we went through rounds of revisions with my agent, who had a very editorial eye and very good marketing sense, and knows what will sell. So I worked with her for a while, and there would be months when I would have sent her the manuscript and I wouldn't hear back from her for quite a while. So it wasn't as if I were working steadily in all that time. There were big gaps in there. At one point I had put the manuscript figuratively in a drawer for a year, just so discouraged after those two agents requested revisions and I never heard from them again. So it was quite a journey to publication. And if you stretch out the timeline, it just looks so discouraging. It just took me so long. But I was also juggling, you know, a relationship and a day job, and I was writing, and, you know, it didn't happen in a vacuum.
Only got it sold to Scout Press.
Yes. My agent sent the manuscript out when it was finally ready to go. She sent it out to 10 publishers, and she called me just a few days later and said, "I'll tell you what I'm hearing, that they couldn't put it down, but they can't publish it."
Oh.
And Scout did not feel that way. Allison Callahan, my editor there, Scout is her imprint. And one of them, she has another imprint under Simon & Schuster Gallery Press. But she's an editor who will take a chance, not only taking a chance on a debut author, but taking a chance on a book like this. So I just feel tremendously lucky. And because of the subject matter, she read the manuscript as a favor to my agent, because Emma Sweeney, my first agent, had sent it to her. Emma sent Allison the manuscript, and because they are friends, Allison read it. She kind of rolled her eyes and thought, "Oh boy, here we go, incest story." But she presented it at a marketing meeting the next day and explained the dilemma, because most publishers will shy away violently from incest stories. And she said, "You know, I don't know what to do here. Can I get some other opinions?" And she said 21 hands went up in that meeting with other people wanting to read the manuscript. And everybody read it in a night. And everybody said yes. They thought this was a book that would sell.
Fabulous. Congratulations.
I hope it sells.
I don't see why it wouldn't. I will be putting it in the hands of our patrons. It's already purchased on Overdrive in audiobook and ebook. So, and it's got lots of holds already. I've checked. So,
oh my goodness.
I think you'll be hearing that a lot of people are just devouring this book.
That would be so lovely.
I think so too. Absolutely. So are you working on anything now, Susan?
I am working on a novel that is set in a cult. Okay. And
Jessica loves that.
I was about to say, I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, that's a hook right there, that it's set in a cult. And I'm setting it in northern New Mexico, where I live. I live in Taos.
Oh, cool.
Dark Horses was set in Virginia horse country in the Shenandoah Valley. And I set it there because I just think Virginia is gorgeous and I love it, and it's horse country. New Mexico is also gorgeous, but it's a different kind of beauty. And the landscape, I think, will play more of a role in the cult book than it does in Dark Horses.
What kind of research are you doing for that, or can you not say?
I've read a couple of books, and I have watched some documentaries on cults. I actually glean a bit more, I think, from the documentaries than from the books in this case. So there are certain things that cults have in common. So they're almost like ground rules. And after that, anything goes.
I recently watched the 4-part documentary on Heaven's Gate, and there was so much more to that whole story than I had realized.
That was very near the place where I used to teach therapeutic horseback riding in San Diego, Rancho Santa Fe, a really wealthy suburb of San Diego. The Heaven's Gate incident was absolutely horrible, but a lot of cults are, you know, predict that the end of the world is coming. And it's amazing to me that people believe some of the things that they believe, but there is brainwashing that takes place.
Yeah, that one was very interesting. And I don't want to veer too far off topic, but I think that was in that documentary was the first time I thought that I heard the term, is it millenistic, where the cult is based on the end of the world, as you were saying?
I actually don't know the terminology, but that is the basis for a lot of them, yes.
Thank you, Susan, so much. I'm telling you, it's going to be a hit.
I
love it.
I hope so.
And come on, how many books get 4 stars and 4-starred reviews and Oprah also on top of it?
That just blew me away. It really did. I mean, just to have those 4 journals review it in the first place was pretty special. And then for each one of them to give it a starred review just made my jaw sag open. I just couldn't believe it.
The New York Times hasn't reviewed it yet, right?
Not yet. I hope they will review it.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll get word about it and they will review it.
Oh, that's great.
Well, it's 2 thumbs up from Jessica and I. So
absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies, both very much.
Thank you. We really appreciate you coming on. And hopefully when your next book comes out, we'll get to speak to you again.
Awesome. I would love that.
You just in the beginning stages, or how far into it are you?
I'm doing what I call the discovery draft. Okay. So I started writing the first draft, discovery draft of it. And realized I had started the book in the wrong place. So I started over thinking I can cull pieces from the original and plug them in here. And that's not working out so well. So essentially I've started over.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we wish you good luck with that. And we look forward to speaking with you again and watching this book climb the charts. How's that?
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your support.
We're going to sign off now. This is Evelyn from Syosset Public Library's Turn the Page. With me today, I have my co-host,
Jessica. Thank you again.
And our special author,
Susan Mihalik. Thank you so much.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.